If you're interested in the behind the scenes of film and TV production in Scotland, stick around for the next 40 minutes or so. You could be in for a few surprises.
Hollywood Insights Podcast.
Online and around the world from Scotland.
Presented by Frank McGowan.
I'm Frank McGowan, and this is Hollywood Insights, a new podcast series from Bad Pony Media in Scotland, looking at all aspects of creative and what goes into the film and TV that you see on your screens. As well as special guests, top 10 countdowns, exclusive interviews, and explainers, we'll be looking at what's going on in Los Angeles, Glasgow, and across Scotland. Join us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Hollywood Insights to give your feedback on topics and have your voice heard as part of the podcast. Coming up on the show today, we speak to writer and producer MJ Martin about writing and ideas for film and television. Scottish actor Christine Corbett gives her top 10 tips for new talent. Poltergeist star Oliver Robbins joins us for an exclusive interview. Composer Paul Devlin gives us his top 10 countdown of iconic movie scores. US star Craig Jordan joins us on the phone live from his Los Angeles home to talk about being an actor, living and working in Hollywood. And we speak to cinema superstar Whoopi Goldberg about her new book, The Unqualified Hostess. Today's episode of Hollywood Insights is brought to you by BroTV, Scotland's new free TV channel, and Collaborate, co-working space in the heart of Glasgow. Find out more about BroTV online at brotv.com/watch and find out more about the benefits of a collaborative co-working space by searching Collaborate Glasgow or calling 0141 212 6350 to see for yourself. Are you interested in having your brand or business featured on the Hollywood Insights podcast? Reaching millions of listeners on all popular streaming platforms. With packages starting from just £45, visit hollywoodinsights.co.uk for more information or email hollywood@badponymediagroup.co.uk.
Hollywood Insights Podcast.
Online and around the world from Scotland.
Hello, I am MJ Martin, Scottish writer and producer. The 98% pilot episode, it was just a really brilliant atmosphere between cast and crew, playing silly pranks on each other. That was like really quite memorable.
MJ Martin grew up in North Glasgow, and as well as her notable work for film and television, recently completed her debut novel Evil Is, part of the controversial new Evil series, set to be published by Olympia Books. With projects that are both edgy and compelling, we speak to her about her work behind the scenes as executive producer and writer, and the need for more realistic LGBT characters on our screens.
For me, I think about 70-80% of the writing process actually goes on before I ever touch a keyboard, because it all goes on in my head. So by the time I'm onto the stage where I'm putting it down, it's pretty much solidified, and it's just a matter of fleshing it out. There's quite a big difference between writing for television and writing a novel. There's quite an air of solitude about being an author, and sometimes you find you lock yourself away. It could be a week, a month, getting lost in the ideas and the characters. When you're writing for TV, it's more of a team effort. Everybody comes in, producers, directors, editors, actors, and they'll all add layers until you've got like a full fleshed out body of work. Even short films, there's like a team of people, and it becomes sort of everybody's vision. You start off either with a concept, or you start off with a kind of brief on what type of concept that you need to come up with before usually anything's written at all. There's a lot of meetings, and usually a small group of people who are working on the production side of it will get together and decide what the needs are. Either the writer will write around those, or it'll kind of be reviewed at stage by stage. Lots of tireless meetings and everybody up with loads of cups of tea at like 2 a.m. trying to work out resources and things like that. A lot of the time there's bits that are cut, there's bits that are needless. You'll see bits in rehearsals if you're lucky enough to have actors that will run through for you. The most important thing is not to be too precious over things. The collaborators will all have some sort of say. Working with other creatives, getting to see what skills they bring to the table, and that's for me what's quite rewarding. executive producer is a massive responsibility. Problem solving, you know, just keeping everybody's morale up behind the scenes. In that sense, it can be quite stressful, but it is also extremely rewarding. You need a team that's going to operate like a smooth machine. Everybody's got each other's back, and that's when you get the most out of everybody, and there's a trust. If you're having a bad day, you know that somebody's got your back. The best team work well with criticism and praise equally. I don't like unnecessariness in scripts, and particularly dialogue. I like to just get to the point with it. I have always been a very passionate advocate for mental health. Statistics don't quite do justice to the epidemic that as a country we now have. I think it's extremely important. In a society now where it seems to be last on the list, all we can really do is lean on each other. And I think it's extremely important not to sort of downplay the impact that we can have for each other. Make sure there's always an open dialogue without stigma. In terms of people who are quite critical of darker materials, I think it just comes down to personal taste. At the moment, I'm working on something that's semi-autobiographical. People who don't like dark content are not going to like my stuff. I think as a species, we've always used storytelling as a way to convey emotions, social changes, social stigmas, challenges. We've always shared that as human beings, and I think it's integral to being human. In terms of being Glaswegian, writers having a voice, we're so multi-talented, multicultural, we've got so much history, we have got so many characters that exist within our society that it's such a shame. And I've always found it really unfortunate that nobody gets to see it apart from within Scotland. We seem to be almost trapped in a bubble. We lack the funding and resources a lot of the time. To move from being just Scotland-wide to being worldwide to people internationally, part of me just feels really sad that there isn't more government focus. LGBT in Scotland is very poorly represented, very poorly. I couldn't at the moment name you one Scottish gay character. There just needs to be more integration where there happens to be gay people in a show and it's not all about them being gay. I'm still quite heavily involved in the 98% project. It's a project that to the outside looks non-active, but it's actually not the case behind the scenes. I can't go into too much detail about it. I like to read factual things. I like to watch factual things, crime documentaries, or any documentaries really. I quite enjoy them in general. Blew through the ID channel, random documentaries on YouTube. The most challenging part for me being a creative is finishing what you start. Everybody knows someone who's went, I should write a book. I could do that. I could make a better TV show than that. You get people who will actually begin it and then they realise that it's not easy. Statistically, 98% who start to write do not finish it. So in order just to finish it, you're getting into that 2% just by finishing what you start. So I would say the hardest part is getting to the end and not overthinking it. If you cloud your thoughts too much with that stuff, you don't finish anything, you don't even get halfway. If you want to make excuses and you want to put your day job first and you want to put either a boyfriend or girlfriend and going out partying first, you're never going to be a writer. You're the only person who can decide to write and finish that. Nobody else can do that for you. If you don't do it, it won't get done. You either do it or you don't. It's as simple as that. Take as long as it takes. Go away and read and write and try again, run it by people. It took me about a year to learn how to write scripts after I decided I was going to. Sometimes people fly through these things, other times it takes someone 10 years. It takes as long as it takes. Skill takes time. So if you're willing to just stick with it, it's all in your court, it's all in your power.
Hollywood Insights Podcast.
Online and around the world from Scotland.
Oliver Robbins is perhaps best known to horror fans around the world as Robbie Freeling from the Poltergeist movies. His new film Celebrity Crush is currently in production and focuses on a deadly obsession with the child star of a horror film from the 80s. Sound familiar? The film is written, produced and directed by Robbins, who also stars as the film's central character, Jonathan. We caught up with Oliver behind the scenes at the Optimus Film and TV Festival to find out how he got his big break in Hollywood, what excites him about the horror genre, and what's going on in the world of Oliver Robbins right now. Oliver, thanks for talking to Hollywood Insights. First question I've got for you is, how did you get started in your career?
I actually did my first commercial with the writer of Starman, who played my father in it, and he also wrote Stand By Me. I went out for the audition, so they said, we love Oliver, we want to be part of this, and I wasn't in the union. They took a leap of faith, hired me, and that was the start of my career.
Did you guys know that Poltergeist was going to be a big hit?
We knew it was going to be a very good film, but we had no idea that it actually would take on the role that it has in film history. I credit that to the fact that you had such a good team effort. I mean, we had Steven Spielberg and Tobe Hooper. We were so lucky. And I think that's one of the reasons why the film has that kind of staying power. The core element is the family. And a lot of the horror movies really don't really have that element. It's more slashing or special effects. They don't have that kind of setup. And I think that's very unique to Poltergeist.
What was it that steered you into your acting career?
I was always picked on as a kid, being beaten up every day. Kids that were like 10 times my size would punch me in the stomach. And I could only defend myself really with words. And that was actually where my acting really started.
When did you guys know there was going to be a sequel to Poltergeist?
On the first one, halfway through, we were watching the dailies. We said, this is so good. There's probably going to be a sequel to it. And lo and behold, a couple of years later, they said, we're going to do another one.
What sort of reaction did you get from fans?
I love talking to fans about the movie because they're telling me their life experiences. And growing up, I always wondered, what did people think of watching Poltergeist?
Yeah.
Finally, now, this is the first opportunity I actually had to talk about it. And they tell me, you scared the bejesus out of me. Tapped into your childhood fears. We can all share that together.
Now, what genre of film did you enjoy yourself?
I like films that are character-driven pieces. It doesn't matter if it's sci-fi, or it's horror, or it's a drama. You know, I've worked with actors as a director now that on the weekend they're shooting these micro-budget little movies that are made for next to nothing. And during the week they're shooting big-time things for the studio, no matter what the genre really is. As long as the movie really is about people and their stories, if you're compelled by those characters and their situation.
What advice would you give to aspiring filmmakers?
Spielberg once told me when he was teaching about cinema, he said, you know, compassion will always win over camera. Great cinema is not just about digital effects. It's about great storytelling.
Overall, what's been your most memorable career moment?
I love doing Poltergeist. I mean, that was the quintessential fun experience. Every day it was like going to camp. I mean, what 10-year-old kid wouldn't want to be covered in molasses and be attacked by trees and clown dolls? I just had the best time. It was such a wonderful group of people I got to work with.
In your opinion, what's the scariest movie you've ever seen?
I would say the scariest movie up to this date was Exorcist. People are going to watch that film 100 years from now. I just saw it like a week ago. There's no CGI, there's no big-time special effect. I'm still terrified by it. The scenes are very subtle. William Friedkin does such an amazing job.
What did you think of the recent remake of Poltergeist?
The remake of Poltergeist, special effects are great and some wonderful actors. However, they didn't really take the time to examine what made Poltergeist such a wonderful movie. Really, the core element was about a mother's love. That child is taken away from her, and she'll fight to get her back. You know, in the remake, that was kind of lost. They attempted to do a conglomeration of all the great things in Poltergeist. I felt like they almost created a laundry list of things they needed to put into the movie, being attacked by a tree or a clown doll. Sadly, it was more about the special effects.
What's your favorite TV show right now?
I love Breaking Bad. I never really saw a TV show like that. I thought it was the best writing. It was the way the story was laid out and the structure of it, and the performances were just amazing.
Now, is it true that the clown doll in Poltergeist was your idea? And are you scared of clown dolls in real life?
I've always been scared of clown dolls. I had this little Charlie Chaplin doll that used to sit in my bedroom. The eyes used to follow me at night, too. It was like pale white. When I was auditioning, I didn't know anything about the possible movie at all. Steven Spielberg, he was really wonderful. He said, what are you scared of? And I said, I'm scared of like trees, I'm scared of clown dolls. Wrote the original draft of the script. Tapped into that fear.
Well, do you believe in ghosts? Do they scare you?
I don't believe in ghosts, but I grew up in this townhouse in New York City. It was built right after the Civil War. I heard people walking up the stairs. And my parents said, no, Oliver, it's just a house settling. But it was a very distinct sound. And to this day, I can't explain it. You're gonna laugh, but maybe I am afraid of ghosts.
What was your favourite toy as a kid?
I just loved Capsella. It was this gift that my parents gave me. It was the most creative gift I ever had in my life. And you could have pontoons, you could create boats and skyscrapers, and a little electrical outlets. I don't know if they make it anymore.
Poltergeist was a family-driven movie. What is your favourite film or TV family?
I like the Breaking Bad family, actually. I love the fact that this character loves his family so much that he's willing to go off to any extent to support them, even drug dealing. And I just love the whole thing of how dysfunctional they are, because that's a little extreme, but we all have problems in our own families and we all can identify with it.
Now, with the new movie coming out, where can people connect with you online?
Join me on Facebook, type in Oliver Robbins, I'll keep you up to date on everything I'm working on.
Oliver, thanks very much for speaking to Hollywood Insights.
Hollywood Insights Podcast.
Online and around the world from Scotland.
Working as a director and producer, I meet a lot of very talented people on both sides of the camera, but none more so than the instantly unforgettable Christine Corbett. Christine sat down with me in the studios at Bad Pony Media to give her top 10 tips for new talent in Scotland.
Hi, I'm Christine Corbett and I'm an actor. I worked in housing. My mum and my brother were both given terminal cancer diagnoses. So I took a package and my friend was doing walk-ons. I'm a great believer in thoughts become things. I didn't know anything about filming, really. I'm smiling now, remembering the first time that I was on a set.
After one of the most devastating life blows imaginable, Christine Corbett turned her passion into action at age 47, stepping onto a set for the first time and realising her dream of becoming an actor. Now part of a BAFTA award-winning ensemble on the inescapable arrival of Lasko Petushke, she's doing what she loves best, working on film, TV and short film, and offers her advice to those starting out in the industry, no matter what age you may be.
My sort of top 10 tips to put you in the right direction. First and foremost, you've got to be thick-skinned. Even the actors that have made it don't know where their next job's coming from, and they've still got to be auditioned, and they don't always get the part. The director knows in a flash if he wants you for the part. Don't ever take it personally. I'd say go and do some short films, some student films. Acting 1-4 at Strathclyde Uni, the lecturers are absolutely fantastic. I would recommend it 100%. It gives you the experience being in a set, cue for action, timing, costumes, hair and makeup. I've met some really amazing creative people. Definitely do some acting classes. Lenny Millen, Glasgow Acting Academy. Is it all right to say bloody brilliant? I went there for quite some time. Great people. Like everything, it's all about networking. When you do get a role, always be in time, be reliable, and then they'll ask you again. Join an agency. They will put you forward for productions. When you're out in a filming job, remember the actors are doing a job and getting into character, going over their lines. So don't get starstruck and pester them for photos. And remember to be quiet when they're filming. The microphones pack up every little sound. Keep warm. It's Scotland. It's Baltic. Remember socks and thermals. And invest in hand warmers. And also, anybody that wanted to learn to dance. I'd done my first Bollywood film. There was all these dancers. Thought, I really need to learn to dance. So I've learned to jive, I've learned to waltz, I've learned to do samba. And it has been scientifically proven that dancing is good for your mental health. And to be a dancer and acting roles as well, because you never know. I would say, all years up and coming potential actors, follow your dreams and your passion in life. If acting is something you want to do, then do it. It's all a great learning curve, but that's just the name of the game. Always follow your gut feeling. Every time I come out, I'm smiling because I love it.
Hollywood Insights Podcast.
Online and around the world from Scotland.
Don't miss the chance to win exclusive film and TV themed prizes from Hollywood Insights. Sign up for free news and updates now at hollywoodinsights.co.uk. And don't forget to join us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter at Hollywood Insights. Scottish film composer Paul Devlin grew up in Motherwell, where he followed a passion for music and cinema. Graduating from Strathclyde University's BA Applied Music with first class honours, he went on to receive the Alexander Stone Award for Excellence in Composing. Now living and working between his home in Hamilton and London, he composes for a variety of media, including music published by Universal and Warner Chappell for feature film, web series, interactive and theatre. And in an exclusive interview with Hollywood Insights, reveals his top 10 compositions of all time.
Ultimately, the job of a film score, you know, is to serve the visuals, heighten the visuals, and ultimately kind of add something that maybe otherwise wouldn't have been there. Rather than going for what I think are the 10 greatest film scores or the 10 most important film scores, I'm just giving you a list of 10 film scores that have really profoundly affected me. Not really in any particular order, but just 10 film scores that I really love. I suppose the first one to mention would be Ennio Morricone's score to The Mission. The first time I heard this score was the first time that I ever really thought about how music was composed and what that process would be like. You know, why would you choose this note and why would you choose this chord? I was actually playing it as a solo euphonium piece with a brass band, and I remember just being in awe of how beautiful this soundtrack was. I mean, it haunted me for months. It still does, to be honest. It's such a beautiful score. I trawled YouTube for performances of it. I spent hours just searching for any performance of this score that I could find, and it's really a significant reason as to why I pursued film scoring as a career. So for that reason, it was straight in there and makes the list. Next up would be a score from John Williams. Those who are familiar with his work, you know, he's written Star Wars, Jurassic Park, Harry Potter, Indiana Jones, Schindler's List, you know, the list goes on. He's an absolute genius. But I think probably my favourite of his scores has to be E.T., The Extraterrestrial. It's just such a wonderful score, and it's so perfect for that kind of fantasy world that Steven Spielberg has created. John Williams is an absolute genius in how he writes his music, but I think this particular score, my favourite part of it has to be the melody, just that main theme. The melody itself is absolutely stunning, but even combined with the harmony and the orchestration, it's just amazing. A stunning score, and one that I never ever get tired of listening to. Next up would be Johan Johansson's score to Arrival. And particularly what I love about this score is his use of vocals. If you know the film is about a linguist who's played by Amy Adams trying to communicate with extraterrestrial beings who have landed on Earth. And Johansson's quoted as saying that he deliberately chose voices as one of the prime instruments in the score of a film that's primarily about language and communication. And that kind of tie-in with the film being about communication, he's using the human voice as the instrument, just is so perfect. It just serves the picture so perfectly, which is ultimately the job of a film score, obviously. It's really a haunting and beautiful score, and one that I love listening to. Next up is Wendy Carlos' score to A Clockwork Orange. Now, this is a wee bit of a cheat because most of the music that appears in this film is pre-composed music, notably Beethoven. The main character loves Beethoven. But there are a few original cues kind of sprinkled throughout the film from Wendy Carlos, and they're all done on synthesizers, on vintage Moog synthesizers. Specifically, the March from A Clockwork Orange, which is a reworking of part of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, just stayed with me for days afterwards. It's just so unique and wonderful, and it pushed me into listening to more of Wendy Carlos' work for this film. And it's a very dark and disturbing film, and her score is so perfect for that film. Next up would be Patrick Doyle's score to Brave. And I've been fortunate enough to meet Patrick Doyle a few times. He's a very nice guy. In fact, we actually went to the same school, believe it or not, a ladies' high school in Motherwell. Admittedly, he was there about 35 years before I was. But I love this score because I think inevitably part of the DNA of any Scottish musician or composer is Scottish music itself, that history and the characteristics of Scottish music. And I often find myself kind of subconsciously including a wee Scottish-ism in some of my compositions, whether it's music you've heard through childhood or growing up. To hear that kind of undeniably Scottish score accompanying this big Pixar Hollywood film, which is set in Scotland, is just kind of so comforting, like a kind of warm blanket around you. It's just so familiar to hear those characteristics of Scottish music on such a grand symphonic scale. It's a fantastically fun and exciting score to listen to. Next up is West Side Story. Now that's a wee bit of a cheat because obviously the music was originally written for the stage play in 1957. The film score does differ from it a wee bit in that a lot of the musical numbers are not in the same order as they are in the stage play, but notably the orchestra that was hired to record the film score is about three times bigger than it ever was for the stage version. I think you can hear that in the film score. It's a much more present, the orchestration is much more present because the ensemble is so much larger. And I remember seeing West Side Story when I was a wee boy, and I saw the film before I ever saw the stage play, and just being blown away, thinking, wow, this is just the best thing I've ever seen. Next up would be Dario Marianelli's score for Atonement. Now, when I was studying at the Royal College of Music, I was fortunate enough to be present during a masterclass with Dario Marianelli, in which he talked, kind of walked us through his compositional process for the cue Elegy for Dunkirk. Now, if you know the film, Elegy for Dunkirk is the cue when James McAvoy's character has just kind of landed on Dunkirk Beach, and I think it's the best cue in the film. Next up is John Powell's score for How to Train Your Dragon. The original really is my favourite Celtic feel as well. You know, we mentioned Patrick Doyle's Celticisms and Scottishisms. This score is full of it as well. The orchestration is massive. It just sounds so incredible. I've lost count in the amount of times I've listened to that soundtrack. I absolutely love it. Next up is Michael Giacchino's score to Up. And the first time I ever saw this film, the married life sequence, it nearly reduced me to tears. In fact, it still does almost reduce me to tears. And Michael Giacchino's score is just such a major part of that. That main waltz theme is just so perfect. But particularly the harmony that he uses in that major seventh chord, it just has such a bittersweet sound to it, which so perfectly encapsulates the main character, Carol. It just so perfectly encapsulates his journey throughout the film. You know, from losing his wife in that opening 5 minutes to the journey that he goes on in the rest of the film. That score is just so perfect for the film. Last but not least, I couldn't go through this list without including my favourite film of all time, and that's Hans Zimmer's score to The Lion King. I'm talking about the original one from 1994. I've lost count of the amount of times I've watched this film as an adult. I don't know how many times I've watched it when I was a wee boy. But that scene at the end as Simba climbs Pride Rock, the cue is called King of Pride Rock, I remember feeling happy and just feeling good. And it wasn't until I was much older that I realised how significant the music was in creating that feeling in me as a wee boy. Just that feeling of something really good is happening as Simba was climbing Pride Rock. The music was such a massive part of that. I listen to it all the time. It's kind of comfort music for me when I just put it on when I want to listen to something.
Hollywood Insights Podcast.
Online and around the world from Scotland.
Hello.
Hi.
Give me 1 second.
No problem.
I need to adjust something.
Craig Jordan is one of Hollywood's rising stars, with credits including Dear White People, 50 Shades of Black, and Mockingbird Lane. His breakthrough feature film role came in 2015 when he played Nate in the critically acclaimed LGBT masterpiece Godless, making him a household name. Craig joins Hollywood Insights on the line for an in-depth interview looking at how he got started in Hollywood, his current projects, and aspirations for the future.
You know, I didn't have much experience, but I got photos taken, and I started taking acting lessons with a man from the Actors Studio named Rick Imberman in a town called Cold Spring Harbor in New York. Kind of went the so-called typical route. I had one friend in LA, a good friend. He was living out here, and his aunts are screenwriters, actually, his father's two sisters. Stayed with my high school friend, and then I stayed with someone who I'd met on the Actors Connection boot camp, and then got a job at a restaurant as a waiter, and I got a manager, more classes here. And then a year later, I did my first film, which is a horror zombie film that's never seen the light of day, called Zombies Ate My Prom Date. It was awesome. With television, they move really fast. You get there and you see like 30 guys that look pretty much just like you, and it's like in and out. You know, you could memorize 5 pages or have 5 pages ready to go, and then sometimes you'll read 2 lines and they'll say, okay, thank you, that's all we need now. And then you don't know how to interpret that. You're like, do they not like me? I don't think it ever gets easier or less mentally hectic, but I've learned to enjoy it more. I heard a quote once from, I think it was from Al Pacino, and he says, you have an audience for that brief time, just enjoy it. You know, it's an industry full of disappointments, and it's really tough when you look at it as, you know, I need this job or I really want this job, and you're seeing it as an interview trying to get a job. I've tried to see it more as just an opportunity to show my creative talent. The 70s was a great decade for film. These gentlemen and ladies that emerged on the scene, so to speak, they really rewrote what it meant to be a leading man or a leading lady. You could be character-y and still carry a film. In addition to the 70s, I also really loved the 90s, and I love the dark films of the 90s, like Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, Leaving Las Vegas, Boys Don't Cry, American Beauty. A really complicated character, someone, you know, maybe an addict or someone, you know, struggling with something. That's what I would really like to tackle. Someone, because I tend to, you know, for auditions at least, you know, I tend to usually play the nice guy. So it'd be fun to play a bad guy.
Hollywood Insights Podcast.
Online and around the world from Scotland.
One of the highlights of 2019 so far for me was hanging with the iconic Whoopi Goldberg in New York and getting the chance to speak to her more about some of her upcoming projects, including her new book, The Unqualified Hostess. The Unqualified Hostess gives everyone the chance to make more of mealtimes, no matter if it's with family, friends, or just you and your own, by getting creative and expressing yourself. So where did the inspiration for such a different type of book come from? And what can we expect from Whoopi as we turn the pages?
I wrote a book, and it's called The Unqualified Hostess. It even features Joy Behar's lasagna. And it's really all about having people at your house. Some fun stuff you can do. I know, I'm the last person you'd expect to be, you know, writing about this kind of stuff. But I love a nice table. And I talk about, you know, setting a table for one person. I just feel like we don't take as good a care of ourselves as we should. And making yourself feel good when you're eating at your house should be a pleasant thing. You got it in your house. Everything that's in this book, you own. Most people don't realize that they have all the things that they could possibly put on the table to make it look great and fun. If it's just you, you know, set yourself a nice table. If you're doing a dinner for lots of people, you could put all kinds of great stuff on your table and people say, what is this? And it gives you something to talk about and make it pretty. So, get the book. You could order it on Amazon. You might be surprised.
You've been listening to the Hollywood Insights podcast from Bad Pony Media. Join us next time for more interviews, behind the scenes and inspiration. Thanks to our supporters, guests and sponsors, and most of all to you for listening in from wherever you are. Stay positive, productive and creative.
Hollywood Insights Podcast.
Online and around the world from Scotland.